Succession number 23812, Reel 1.
Mr. Cyril Doyle, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Doyle?
Yes, I was born in Southwold on January the 28th, 1920.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and the family background in Southwold?
Well, my family were associated many years at Southwold. My grandfather was a farmer and was well known in Southwold in those particular days. And on the common at Southwold, his herd of cows, etc., horses, and that were grazed on Southwold Common, which is, of course, is not the case nowadays because of the fact that dogs, excretia, etc., on the grass is not does not endear in any way the health of cattle or humans, come to that. But nevertheless, my father also was associated in that respect, and they were many years ago associated with the old Southwold Railway. They were indeed carters for the Southwold Railway.
What did that mean?
Carters meant that they were contracted to meet the passengers of Southwold at Southwold Railway Station, which is in Station Road, and they were passengers who came from far and wide on the London North Eastern Railway. And at the Halesworth Railway Station, they were met by this very antiquated small-gauged railway, which locally is very well known, and over many years has been made a joke of. In fact, a cartoonist by the name of Reg Carter, whenever one goes to Southwold in some of the shops, you'll find the old postcards relating to the Southwold Railway. And on some of those you will see W. Doyle. That was the initial and the surname, obviously, of my grandfather and also my father. And they would cart the luggage from passengers to the various hotels, especially in those days on Southwold Seafront. There was the Grand Hotel, which unfortunately during the course of the World War II was inhabited by soldiers who absolutely rack and ruin the place, and it was then demolished and now have modern bungalows on the site. But that was one of the main hotels in which they carted their luggage. In 1929, the old Southwold Railway went into liquidation. The consequence of that was, of course, that as many of the local people were put out of work. My grandfather and my father then took on a contract with the London North Eastern Railway at Halesworth. And they had, in those days, they bought two quite modern Dodge lorries. It was after about 4 or 5 years that the London North Eastern Railway then had their own cartage. My father then took on a corn and seed merchant, and he was also a coal merchant in the town, and took on the old corn chandler shop in the High Street in Southwold, which is on the corner of Manor Park Road and the High Street, next to Marshall's Bakery. As far as it goes, we were a family of 9 children. I had four brothers and four sisters, and that meant there was 11 of us who existed, I think the word is existed, in a very small house in Lawn Road, Southwold, near the Common. In those days, many people were fairly poverty-stricken, and my father, in his younger days, was a farm labourer for my grandfather, and the consequence of that is that nearly always there were large families, probably caused before the advent of television. I would say that that those people are the backbone of perhaps the town of Southwold, because one must relate to the old fishermen of the day, who were the characters of the town, and also the people like my father, who served on various committees, councils, etc. And this was probably the make-up of the town of Southwold in those particular days. As far as my education was concerned, I had a very elementary background to my education at the old Southwold School, which was the old Flint School, which characterised many of the buildings in Suffolk and also Norfolk. And those days, perhaps, because of the elementary side of education, and as to the poor people of the day, one was more likely to be taught how to use a fork and spade and not the pen and a paper. So therefore, one had to become self-educated when one left those particular premises and school in those days. I myself became an apprentice.
Well, were you 14 when you left school?
Yes, I was 14 when I left school.
So that means
which was a normal then, and I earned 7 and 6 a week as a trainee apprentice at the local printing works as a compositor.
What was that work like? Can you tell us a bit about the work as an apprentice composer? They don't do it anymore, do they?
Well, it was a hand composing in those days, and treadle machines, and we would do all sorts of local posters, etc. We also would do various small church magazines. In fact, there was one or two in London that we used to do.
How did you actually do it? Can you explain?
A hand comp was done by the typefaces in cases, and one would pick out and each particular letter, of course, and we'd put it in what was then called a stick. A stick comprised, really, was a metal container which one used to insert the type. The type then was put into what was called a chase. And it was, and once it was made up, it was called a form. And the form was then put on an old treadle platen machine, which had a foot treadle. And so we worked on this foot treadle. And although the apprenticeship time for that particular era was 7 years, nevertheless, such a small concern, one probably learnt everything in about a couple of years. But nevertheless, it served a very useful purpose as far as I was concerned for my future life in printing. And I did, I think, about 6 years as an apprentice at James Apprentice in Church Street in Southwold. And it's only on this last year that, unfortunately, the Southwold Press closed down as such. In Church Street, Southwold, and is now accommodated in Raiden, which adjoins Southwold.
Did you enjoy the work?
Did I?
Enjoy the work?
Oh yes, very much so. I enjoyed the work in those particular days. I suppose that I had a certain flair, in any case, for print and the like, and I quite enjoyed what I used to do, which stood me in good stead because I finished my printing work and experience and employment at Beccles in Suffolk, at Clay's, which were a big concern. This was after the war, I might add. We're going probably a little bit too far.
That's all right. So you were still working at Church Street when the war broke out?
I was still working at when the war broke out. I was called up, yes.
Now, what about, do you remember the outbreak of war, the sort of lead up to it and the actual day itself?
I remember well the time when Neville Chamberlain, this was on the old radio sets, of which there was an accumulator, and the valves, and I well remember my old grandmother and my mother sitting down listening to this news, which was received with especially with the ladies of the day, with many tears, because no doubt they can recall the First World War and as to what happened to the ladies, to their sons and to their husbands. And the fact that there was going to be this war, they had the knowledge of wars which we as young men hadn't. And as a matter of fact, I suppose at that particular day, being 19 years of age, we in some ways looked upon it as a great adventure, and we're only too willing to don a uniform and go off to war.
Did it affect your work? I mean, when were you called up?
Affect me work? Not really. It was an accepted fact, of course, that one. Excuse me. It's an accepted fact that during those days that those in employment, wherever you were, that obviously those young men were going, and there was no option for the employers to do much about it anyway. But nevertheless, those old firms and that sort of continued, because there were those obviously who were not over age.
Now, when were you called up, do you remember?
I was called up on May 1940.
Now, before that, had anything happened? I mean, were there air raid precautions in too short? How did it affect life at the start of the war?
Well, in small towns like our old Southwold, as boys and that, we were obviously in various associations. I was very much associated with the Scouts.
Tell me about that, because we're quite interested in the Boy Scouts. Well, right from before the war right through to the effects of the war.
Yes, well, during the my early days, from a cub to a Scout, etc., in Southwold itself, in Mill Lane, there was an old garage, and it was in that old garage that the Southwold Scouts met once or twice a week. And I suppose that, as I just said, that people in those days were reasonably poverty-stricken. There was a vast difference between rich and poor in those days. And I can recall that, for example, large families like my mother and father's family, the children, the parents used to pay about a penny a week into a club or something, in the Scouts, to help to buy perhaps their uniforms. And this, of course, was offset also by the local Scouts Association with bazaars and that, and they supplemented those sort of things to help us in those days. These various organisations, such as Scouts and the Guides, were very much part and parcel of small towns in those days. And
what kind of activities did they organise?
The activities in those days were basically well, were based mainly on Baden-Powell's ideas as to how the upbringing of the young of this nation and indeed the world should really be. And it took on almost a Christian connotation. There were church parades, for example, which were held, especially on St. George's Day, one would hold church parades. There was camps going out to outlying districts. In fact, in those particular days, as far as the world was concerned, in a boy's mind, and any child really, was that Lowestoft and Yarmouth were the ends of the earth, and Lord Stradbroke's estate at Henham was our camping ground, and we would go there and we would have a wonderful time camping.
What kind of thing would you do?
That was all to do with a sort of sporting attitude to it. We had races, we were also taught how to exist in the woodlands, and all that type of thing, which indeed I think added to the character of the children and who belonged to those organisations, and stood them in good stead, no doubt, in their days as they progressed through life. I know that it did to me personally, and if I were to relate a continuation of the Scouts, as far as I was concerned, at the early onset of the war, we in Southwold were given little duties. For example, when the evacuees came to Southwold from various parts, London in particular, all these children arrived, and so we as Scouts were congregated at the local school in Southwold, and we met the evacuees and we did our best to try and accommodate them both in Southwold and Raiden. Most people received these evacuees with a great deal of thought and kindness. There were odd ones who unfortunately did not receive them in that manner, but nevertheless we did our best to do that. Another thing...
Did you have an evacuee at your house, or was it overcrowded already?
We just about squeezed into our house, ourselves being 11 in there, and my mother in those days, by the way, irrespective of the fact that there was 11 in our house, a little cottage, she would take in visitors, summer visitors.
Can you stick to the evacuee? Because I'm quite interested. Do you remember the evacuee you got and how they settled in? And a bit about how it was for you having this stranger from, was it London or from where?
Yes, of course, evacuees, as far as it goes, coming from London, of course, with their Cockney accent, it caused quite a lot of amusement, quite obviously. Nevertheless, I think those children settled down for some considerable time, although I believe that beyond my days when I joined up, actually, I believe a lot of them actually went back home or to other parts of the country, left Southwold. But that is a little bit beyond my knowledge because of being away.
Were the problems settling the child into your family?
No, I think that the children themselves... adapted to life in such places as Southwold and that sort of thing. Many, of course, had never seen the sea even. They did not hardly know that such a thing existed, being completely ignorant of those things that we accepted as being part and parcel of our life. No doubt that they were surprised to see the fishermen of the day, which one could say that in those days the fishermen were, as I've already said, the characters of the town, and I think they quite intrigued the youngsters with their seafaring story. Some of them, no doubt, very much overstretched. But
so they sort of found you a little strange, but. You know, what about? I mean, they come from London. Great Yarmouth was the end of the world to you. I mean, did you find it strange that they were from London and that they were big city children?
Of course, London was something which I suppose created great excitement in those days, because after all, it was the capital of our country, and we could well imagine that London itself. Was the extremity of England from the north to south, or south to north, as the case may be. And to find that these children come, and they were indeed to us like foreigners, I suppose you could say. Even in those days, as children, to see a coloured person, you know, in our town and that sort of thing, it was something extraordinary. We couldn't believe, we'd only heard at school that such people existed. And to see, indeed, even for the older generation, and many, a lady would peep from the curtain to see a coloured person, probably in the streets of Southwold.
And was there any trouble with any of them?
Well,
stealing
things like that. Well, as I say, I was in the Scouts, and I was about 19 at the time, and therefore one didn't truly know too much about what was going on in other people's houses. One could only relate to the things that we done as Scouts in helping to take them to various people's houses. As indeed there were other organisations doing exactly the same, of course.
Now, what other jobs were the Boy Scouts given when the war came?
Well, this, as far as concerned, that is the older members of the Scouts, linked a liaison with the Coast Guards of the day. The Coast Guards of the day on Southwold Gun Hill were volunteers. Many of them were old seamen and that. And the idea was that we would go at night time to the lookout place on Gun Hill, and we would do a 2-hour on and a 4-hour off. And we would patrol in darkness, of course, along the beach from the Gun Hill in Southwold to the harbour entrance, and anything that we saw which we thought was strange or detrimental to the town itself, we would report back to the Coast Guards. And I can well relate, because after all we were young and were full of humour and that sort of thing, and I was with one chap approaching Southwold Harbour, and it was a quiet night, and we both saw on the beach a light flashing, and immediately, I suppose, to our fertile imagination, we thought, ah, spies, you see, and we gradually crept towards where this light was flashing. But when we got there, we found that, being a very quiet night and the sea was just lapping onto the foreshore, it was going over an old piece of rotten wood, no doubt from one of the wrecks off Southwold. And as it went over the wood, and washed back again, the fluorescence on the wood was shining, and then it switched off as the waves receded. So on the way back, we picked up this piece of wood, and as we approached the Coast Guard lookout, we saw the old man in there, a man by the name of Pack, Mr. Pack, and we saw him staring out of the window. And we crept underneath the window and held this piece of wood up. And with our finger, we wrote his name. And as we wrote his name with the finger, so the fluorescence would light up and then go off. He was deeply shocked, we'll say. And anyway, when we got in, we had to fill in a log book. Which indeed the Coast Guards themselves also did likewise. The Coast Guard had reported nothing to report, but we, with our young eyesight, had actually seen the silhouettes of quite a convoy going past, and we felt quite pleased to think that we'd seen something which the Coast Guards hadn't seen. We were housed in an old garage at Stoolhouse, which is more or less adjacent to the Coast Guard. And there we...
The scouts.
We would sleep in there on our 4 hours. And I can well recall that as we slept on the concrete floor of that garage, during the course of the night there was much scuffling going on, and we actually had rats running across our beds, which I suppose was quite a thing for us to remember, really. But there were other duties that the scouts performed in those early days, and that was also to liaise with the people of the day at the police station, and we would have to go down to air raid wardens, etc., immediately a siren was sounded, we had to leave our homes, rush down to the police station where we congregated to await instructions in case there was any bombing of Southwold. There was also at the old police station at Southwold, one of the buildings was set aside for us to go into this building with one of the gas masks on, and also when halfway through to take it off to experience the type of gas what we were likely to see. And of course I think that was basically tear gas in there, because I can remember coming out one end with my eyes absolutely streaming. But whilst we were at the old police station, which I think is worth recording, is that there was an amnesty for people to hand in any weapons that they might have, such as any firearms, knives, etc., etc. And these were handed into Southwold Police Station on an amnesty, and we were there also to receive with the police these various old pistols and guns, etc., etc. And it's my belief that and probably not recorded, that in the grounds of the old Southwold Police Station, probably at this very time, under the soil, buried are all these old weapons, etc., etc., and which probably, if anybody wished to dig up the ground there, they might come across some very ancient relics of firearms, etc. This, I think, was the extent of what we as scouts got up to during the war years.